Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein Fax of Web Yeshiva with this week's Rashi podcast for Parashat Noach. Visit www.webyeshiva.org for more information on our fully interactive online yeshiva. This week we are going to concentrate on birds. Now, as everybody knows, when Noach built his ark and set it afloat upon the flood waters, he brought with him 2 or 7 of every type of bird that there was. Today we're going to focus, though, not on the chickens nor on the ostriches, but we're going to concentrate on the 2 birds that are discussed most in the parasha, that being the dove and the raven. Particularly, we're going to talk about the raven. Now, you have to feel a little bad for the raven, because the raven gets a bad rap in this parasha. Right? Everybody loves the dove. Right? It's snowy white and pure and good, and in the story, she obediently brings back to Noach what he's waiting to hear, right? That the waters are going down. The raven, on the other hand, is generally considered less enchanting. Right? It has dark feathers, has a startling caw, as opposed to the dove's gentle coo, this bird, this predator, scavenger bird, is generally considered less enchanting, and is actually, for example, in the book of Yeshayahu, in Perek Lamed Dalet, is considered a symbol of desolation. Interestingly, the perception of the Orev in Tanakh is a bird that is unable to sufficiently provide for its ravenous young. Possibly inspired by the startling caw, which I mentioned a moment ago, which can be heard from very far away. There are 2 psukim in Tanakh which describe the young of the Orev crying out, and it's interpreted in these 2 cases as crying out for food, right? Because the parent Orev is unable or unwilling, depending on how you understand it, to provide the food, enough food for the ravenous young, and therefore it is God who has to provide the food for the baby birds. So, for example, in the book of Iyov, Perek Lamed Chet Pasuk Mem Aleph, Mi yachin la'orev tzedo, ki yiladav el yishaveu yit'u livli ochel. Who will prepare the food for the orev when its children cry out to God because they don't have food? And it's a similar pasuk in Tehillim. So, somehow, back to our parasha, it is no great surprise that the Orev doesn't supply Noach with that sign of God's compassion at the end of the flood that Noach so craves, so looking for. And this brings us to Perek Chet in Sefer Bereshit. We'll start a pasuk earlier in Pasuk Vav. Vayihi miketz 40 yom, vayiftach Noach et chalon hateva asher asa. And after 40 days, Noach opens up the window of the teva, of the ark, and then pasuk zayin vayishalach et haorev vayetze yatzo vashov ad yivosh et hamayim me'al haaretz. And he sent out the raven, and he went off, going off and returning until the waters were dried up from upon the earth. First, let's understand the words of the pasuk. The pshat, let's say, of the pasuk, the Orev, intimidated by the unabated waters, right, the vast expanse of water in front of him, he does not venture out far from the teva in search for dry land, right? And basically, he doesn't complete his task. Right? He flies out a little bit, and then he comes right back. Right? He doesn't go out far in search of dry land. Now, Rashi, in the beginning of this pasuk, notes the Orev's ambivalent, uncooperative behavior. If you look at his comment on the word yatzo vashov, but ultimately he expands our understanding of the Orev in his next comment on the end of the pasuk on the words ad yevosh et hamayim. So he says, Rashi says, pshuto kemashmao. Right. His first comment is that we're meant to understand the pshat of the pasuk kimashmo, right, as it sounds. Right, what is the pshat of the pasuk? What it seems to say. What we mentioned earlier, right, that he, the raven, would go out and out a little bit and then come back to the ark. Or Rashi suggests earlier in the commentary that he was circling the ark, right, never going venturing up far, ad yivosh et hamayim, until the water dried up. Which makes sense because then he was no longer intimidated by the water and would venture further out. That, according to Rashi, is the pshat. But then Rashi goes on. Ava midrash agada, מוכן היה העורב לשליחות אחרת, בעצירת גשמים בימי אליהו, שנאמר, והעורבים מביאים לו לחם ובשר. Rashi quotes here from Bereshit Rabbah. The raven was destined for another errand. When the rains were withheld during the time of Eliyahu, as it says, the ravens brought him bread and meat. According to this midrash, the raven had an encore, which took place many years later when the prophet Eliyahu brought a severe drought upon the land. This happens in the book of Melachim Aleph, Perek Yud Zayin, chapter 17, where Eliyahu, kind of out of nowhere, decides apparently on his own that there is going to be a drought, right? That rain is no longer allowed to fall, right? Until the people start behaving themselves, right? Bothered apparently by the widespread idolatry during his time, he said, "We cannot have rain until the people go back to the proper worship of Hashem." After Eliyahu does this, meaning after he brings the drought upon the land, Hashem tells Eliyahu to go into hiding, and he orders the ravens to bring him food. And we read there in Perek Yud Zayin of Melachim Aleph, Vayelech vayaski dvar Adonai, Vayelech vayeshev b'nachal Krit asher al pnei ha-yerdin. Right? Eliyahu does what Hashem says. He goes and he hides in a place called Nachal Krit, near the Yarden. V'ha'orvim mivim lo lechem u'basar. That he would drink water from the nachal, from the river, and the orvim, the ravens, would bring him bread and meat. The next pasuk says, "Vayim iketz yamim, vayivash hanachal kilo haya geshem ba'aretz." Right. The next, after a while, the nachal that he was drinking water from dried up because there was no rain in the land, and then Eliyahu has to go off somewhere else. Now, what is going on here in this Rashi? Why is Rashi, following the Midrash, connecting these two stories? Right? Why does he feel compelled to bring this here in his commentary? So first of all, what Rashi is doing, he's noting certain common themes. First of all, the theme of the drying up of the land. Now, it's interesting that the concept of the drying up of the land is so different in the two stories, and yet Rashi, or again, the Midrash, connects the two, right? In the story of the Mabul, the drying up of land is generally thought of as a good thing, right? After the Mabul, the world is destroyed. The drying up of the land is the sign of the new beginning, right? When the world is going back to its old self, or rather, going back to the possibility of a new beginning. Hopefully, not its old self, but it's a positive thing, the drying up of the land. Whereas in the time of Eliyahu, the drying up of the land is a negative thing. It's something that brings drought and famine and a lot of hardship to the land. And yet, the themes are there. And in the description of the water or the lack of water in both stories, of the water on the land, there's even a ring of familiarity between the two stories. For example, in the psukim, in the story of Noach, the immediate psukim that we are dealing with, and also others throughout the description of the rain and the drying up of the rain, we have phrases such as Ad yevoshet hamayim me'al ha'aretz, and then in the next pasuk that Noach sends out the yonah li'ot hakalu hamayim me'al pnei ha'adama. And then in the next pasuk, we hear that the Yonah comes back to the Teva, Ki mayim al penei kol ha'aretz. These repeated descriptions of water, rain, being on the land, right? The phrases that are used over and over again are mayim al penei ha'adama, al ha'aretz, al penei kol ha'aretz, which are very similar to what we see in the story of Eliyahu, where, for example, shortly after the psukim we quoted earlier, we read the words, Ad yom tet Hashem geshem al pnei ha'adama. Or in the beginning of Perek Yudchet of Melachim Aleph, Hashem says to Eliyahu that he has to go and speak to the king Achav. Why? Ve'etna matar al pnei ha'adama. Right? So these phrases, which repeat in both stories, remind one of the other story as each is being read. And so I have to imagine that this is part of what the Midrash is picking up on, right? That there's like a similar ring between the two stories. The other common theme, of course, are the ravens, right? That we have in our story, the Orev being sent out on the shlichut of seeing whether there is the water is abating after the flood. And we have the Orvim in the story of Eliyahu, which are bringing food to Eliyahu while he's hiding out at Nachal Krit. And I think, you know, it probably goes without saying, but nevertheless might be worth mentioning, that the Orvim in that story of Eliyahu are doing a somewhat unusual task, meaning birds, generally, as far as I know, don't supply food for human beings, right? So we're the Orvim not only appear in the story of Eliyahu, but they stand out in the story of Eliyahu. Right? So much so that there are commentaries who feel the need to explain that Orvim aren't really Orvim, meaning they're not birds, and they give some other interpretation as to what exactly Orvim are. So to go back to our Rashi that we're learning, Rashi suggests a clever interpretation of the text, right? When it says about the raven, about the orev, vayetze yatzov vashov ad yevosh etamayim me'al ha'aretz, Rashi suggests, again, following the Midrash, the raven went off, going off and returning, avoiding his task, right, avoiding the job that he was given by Noach, until the waters were dried up from the earth, dried up from upon the earth during the time of Eliyahu, right? Then, that Midrash suggests he doesn't avoid his task any longer. Then the orev does something, right? But only during that time, during the time of Yevoshet HaMayim, not the Yevoshet HaMayim during the time of Noah, but the Yevoshet HaMayim during the time of Eliyahu. Then the Orev does fulfill its task. Now, the creativity of the Midrash's reading of this verse notwithstanding, it's perhaps not the Midrash's interpretation of the verse that compels Rashi to include it in his commentary. Because, as I pointed out already, Rashi himself points out that this is not the pshat of the pasuk. That this is not what the pasuk means, what it intends when it says Ajivosh Tamayim. Ajivosh Tamayim means Ajivosh Tamayim in the time of Noah. I mean, that's clearly what the pshat of the pasuk is. So why is Rashi bringing this commentary? Why does he bring in this midrash as a second commentary? So one possibility is that there is something in the pasuk itself that is still troubling to Rashi, that isn't satisfied by the pshat meaning of the pasuk. So different super commentaries, meaning the commentaries on the commentary of Rashi, bring different possibilities as to what that that difficulty in the pasuk might be. So some suggest, for example, such as the Maharshal, that in the pasuk it says ad yevoshet hamayim me'al ha'aretz, whereas later on, when the land actually does dry up, it says ad yevoshet ha'aretz. Right, not the water that was upon the land, but the land itself dried up. So the difference between the two suggests the Maharshal says that maybe something else is being alluded to here. A different time when there was no need for the land to dry up, as we have in the story of Noach, but where the water dried up from upon the land, meaning that there was a drought. Okay, such is the suggestion of the Maharshal. Another clever suggestion is that the word yevoshet, yud vet shin taf, if you read it backwards, could be read as tishbi, which of course refers to Eliyahu, and so that perhaps in that word, the Midrash sees a hint to, or at least an opening, to connect to the story of Eliyahu. Another possibility, which I haven't seen in any particular commentary, but what might work is that we are told that the Orev avoids doing his task until the water dries up, which, according to the Pshat, would seem to mean that once the water dried up, the Orev did venture out. And when the Orev did not return, that could have been a sign to Noach as well, that the land had dried up. Noach doesn't wait for that, however, and he sends the Yonah instead. Right? And the Yonah does do some other things before disappearing when the land dries up. But ultimately, in the end, both birds do go away, it seems, once the land dries up. So perhaps you could ask, you know, why was waiting for the Orev not enough? No, I guess you could just say that Noah was impatient. He wanted to have a sooner sign. He wanted to see if there was a bird who would venture further up than the Orev so he can get a sign earlier to find out what was going out in terms of the water going down. But ultimately, the orev does do what the dove does. And so perhaps you can ask, you know, why was that sign from the orev not going to be enough that Noach had to send the Yonah instead? So perhaps that's where the Midrash steps in and says, well, because it really means something else, or that the ultimate job of the orev was to do something later on and not to fulfill its task right now. I don't know. Right, so you could find possible difficulties in the text that you could pin this midrash upon. None of them, to my mind, you know, scream out for interpretation, but they are there. Another possibility, however, is that it wasn't a necessary rereading of the pasuk that drives Rashi here, but rather it was the broader message of the midrash that spoke to Rashi, and because of that, he wanted to include it in his commentary. Meaning that the message of the Midrash, even if it's not shot in the Pasuk, is shot about the story in general. Right? There's something that the Midrash is teaching us that was important, according to Rashi, for us to understand about the story that we are reading, the story of Noach, and because of that, he includes it in his commentary. And to understand that, we have to understand the story of Eliyahu a little bit better, as well as the connection between the story of Eliyahu and the Orev's task in the story of Eliyahu, what the Orev is doing there. Now, according to some, the message that comes out from the Midrash sees the Orev in a consistent light, right? I described at the beginning of the podcast how the Orev is generally perceived as a symbol of desolation, as a creature who is unable to provide for its young. Not particularly a symbol of compassion. And so, for example, the Maharal, the Gur Aryeh, his commentary on the commentary of Rashi, suggests that what we see in the story of Eliyahu is a continuation of that image of the Orev. Just like the Orev in the story of Noach can't muster up enough compassion to bring Noach the sign of hope that he's looking for, so too the Orvim in the story of Eliyahu are the symbols of a lack of compassion. How so? Because in the story of Eliyahu, due to his zealousness in the name of Hashem, brings the drought upon the people, right? But in order for that plan to work, in order for the drought to serve its purpose, Eliyahu himself has to kind of survive the drought. And that's why he goes to Nachal Crit, and he drinks the water there, and he is and Hashem provides for him food via his unusual messengers of the Orvim, so that Eliyahu can continue his important work and survive the difficult period which he himself has brought upon the land. Okay, to quote the Gur Aryeh himself, Shehaya Eliyahu mevi poranut leolam v'hu ha'ra'av, right, that Eliyahu brought destruction and hardship upon the world, meaning the famine. Ve'el zeh haya muchan lefi shehu achzari gam ken. Right, this was a job that was fit for the orev, right, because the orev is an achzar creature, and a cruel creature. Ve'ilu lo haya le'Eliyahu mishi yefarnes oto lo haya mevi ha'ra'av leolam. Right, if Eliyahu couldn't survive, he wouldn't have been able to bring the Ra'av to the world, the famine to the world. Right, so it was the ravens who made it all possible, right? When Eliyahu decides to punish the world, to bring hardship and famine and terrible things to the world as a punishment, the Orvim are ready. Then that's the job for us, the Orvim say. Right? And that's when the Orev makes his reappearance, according to the Gur Aryeh, because that's a more fitting job, right? Let the dove do the nice, compassionate job in the story of Noach. We'll do our type of work later on during the time of Eliyahu. I'd like to suggest a slightly different interpretation. That maybe what we're seeing here is not so much a continuation of the old expectation of what the Orev is going to do, but perhaps we see in this midrash a tikkun of the Orev. In his commentary on the story of Eliyahu, Rashi says, on the pasuk, which tells us of the drying up of the Nachal, right? You recall that when Eliyahu went to hide out after bringing the famine to the land, Hashem He's told to hide out. He goes to a place called Nachal Crete. And then we're told that eventually, this Nachal from which Eliyahu was drinking dried up. Right? Vayivasha Nachal. And Rashi comments, Kedei sheyida tzorech hagshamim. V'yatriach legalot shehaya kasheh be'inei HaKadosh Baruch Hu sheYisrael shuyin metin berav. And according to Rashi, and this sheds a very different light on what Eliyahu has done here. According to Rashi, why does the Nachal dry up? Because Hashem wanted Eliyahu to see how difficult the drought was, that he would understand the importance of the rain, and that it was kasher be'enei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that it was difficult in the eyes of Hashem, sheYisrael shuyin mitim ra'av, that B'nai Yisrael were suffering so much and dying because of the famine. Now, while ideally, right, Hashem might have been pleased with Eliyahu's plan, meaning Hashem doesn't want the people to be worshipping idols and wants the people to return, but according to Rashi, Hashem was not completely pleased with Eliyahu's tactics. Right? Eliyahu himself decides to bring the famine, forcing, as it were, the hand of Hashem in this manner. But Hashem isn't pleased. And Hashem, in this story, and apparently in the stories that follow as well, is trying to teach Eliyahu a lesson. Yes, the people have to be taught. And yes, the people have to return to proper worship of Hashem. But this might not be the way to do it. Having the people suffer and dying from thirst might not be the proper course of action. So what does all this have to do with the Orvim? If this was indeed Hashem's attitude towards the drought that Eliyahu had brought upon the land and upon the people, perhaps not just the drying up of the Nachal, but other aspects of that same story were also meant to be teaching Eliyahu the lesson. And Hashem himself not only told Eliyahu to hide out, and not only provided the water from the Nachal, but also provided Eliyahu with food via the Orvim. So it has been suggested, you know, that the reason he chose the Orvim, why Orvim specifically, as we saw earlier, Orvim are animals which by their nature don't provide food, or at least are unable to provide enough food for their starving offspring. So, interestingly, the Orvim are actually the least likely candidates to be bringing food to Eliyahu. Right, those who, in Tanakh, are repeatedly seen as those who are unable to provide, are here are becoming the providers. So perhaps the message to Eliyahu is, yes, it might seem that the people need to be punished, but Hashem is trying to teach Eliyahu that sometimes compassion is in order. And to drive this message home, God sends the food via his unusual messengers, an act that greatly contrasts with Eliyahu's own conduct. Right, which had resulted in the famine and in hunger. So God is hinting to Eliyahu that if the ravens, who are the most unlikely of providers, could go against their nature and bring Eliyahu food, then surely Eliyahu himself could also show compassion for the people, even if he wasn't necessarily predisposed to do so. Bringing this all back to our parasha, which, after all, is where Rashi brings up this midrash, perhaps Rashi is suggesting, by including it as a second interpretation, despite the fact that it isn't the pshat, that the message of the midrash is the pshat of Parashat Noach. Right? Life on the Teva was also an exercise in compassion. Right? The people on the Teva were the survivors of a heartless and self-centered generation. Right? And as the inhabitants of that, what was basically a floating zoo, they needed to master the art of caring for others. Right? This is the idea that appears in the Midrash, in other places in the Midrash. Right? That's what they had to do in the Ark. They had to learn how to take care of each other, how to survive together in small quarters, how to provide what every creature needed at the right moment. So although the raven, the orev, might have failed to do its part while on the Teva, it ultimately, in this other midrash, conveys the central lesson of the experience of the Teva, right? That one has to learn of the need for the compassion for others, and also the importance of making the most of a second chance. In the season of Mashiva Ruach Umarid HaGashem, I'll end once again with a tefillah that we will get just the right amount of Geshem al Pnei Adama, not too much, not too little. And as always, Shabbat Shalom u'mevarach.